I think we're all here, right?
Good. Good evening, and welcome to Shattered Lives, everyone. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice. We here at Shattered Lives are very excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator, getting to the heart of the matter and what crime victims' families experience and what they need to know in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to the show, please go to www.donnagore.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of the case or organization featured the week before our show is aired. And don't forget, in case you can't listen from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern, you can listen at any time using our archival feature. Just look for the big red heart with the cracks. And each and every week, I have the pleasure of someone's company as well as a unique guest, and that's my PR manager, the person who keeps me in line and the person I try to keep on her toes, just like a ballerina. Delilah, president of Imagine Publicity, welcome. Thanks for being here with me.
Oh, hi, Donna. I'm the roving co-host. If anybody needs a co-host, just let me know. I'm more than happy. Not really. I'm, you know, two shows is enough for me.
That's right. Well, like I say, we try to keep you on your toes, and you do a very good job, and that's why we all appreciate having this forum. And if or not companies like yours, our victims would not have a voice. And but all kidding aside, we do serious topics here, but we also like to have fun and educate at the same time. And I have to say that we'll be bringing on our guest in just a minute. And I want to let you know that our guest tonight is someone who displays more courage and fortitude than any ordinary person that I have known. Melissa, or like she likes to be called, Missy Khan, is the sister of Maureen Brainerd Barnes, tragically one of the victims of the Long Island serial killer. And tonight, again, the focus is not so much on the crime, but we concentrate on the aftermath. And so we want to talk more with regard to those topics. So, Missy, please, welcome to Shattered Lives, and we're so glad you're here with us. How are you?
I'm good, Donna. Thank you.
Well, good, and we're very, very pleased to have you. I had the benefit of listening to a show that you appeared on a few days ago and learned a lot of information, but I know you're here for a specific purpose, and one thing that really struck me is that you've had to make many sacrifices, in your life since this happened. And one thing that really touched my heart is that there was a particular time when you were in danger of losing a job you had, and you said to your employer, I can find another job, but I can't find another sister. And that just says it all to me, your dedication, your heart, and the fact that this is what you were meant to do, at least for this period of time in your life. Can you tell us about that and why you feel, even though your sister's remains have been found, you feel like you're having to go the extra mile? Why are you doing this?
I think I do it because I know that if it was me in this situation and my sister was, left behind, she would do the same thing for me as well.
Sure.
I know that throughout years of growing up with my sister, I would have stick up for her and be there for her in life. So It doesn't change just because she's gone.
Well, I think that's very commendable, and you are certainly wise beyond your 24 years, that's for sure, and we're all very proud of you. We really are, and I think we'd like to get to know more, some about you and your mission, what you're trying to do in raising funds, and about your sister. But people have had a chance, I think, to hear from a lot of shows about the crime itself. But I was wondering, we know that she had to do a particular type of job at a certain point in her life for survival, and we're not here to judge. Well, I think we all have had to do that or know someone that has to do something in order to take care of their family. But I was just wondering if you could tell our audience to begin with some of her interests, some of her hobbies, and maybe what kinds of other areas of employment she had up until that time. Give us a picture of her. Paint a picture, if you would.
All right. Maureen really enjoyed writing. She wrote a lot of poetry. She had composition books upon composition books of just her poetry that she would write. She would also write song lyrics. She wanted to be a songwriter.
Really?
She was really, yeah, she was really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
One of her favorite, poets was Shel Silverstein. She had every single book of his, and she would, she started gathering those books as when she was young, and she used to read me the poetry from it. She just found it so, like, you know, amazing how people could put words to mean something.
If people aren't familiar with that poet, can you tell us what style of poetry was it?
It was like more like kind of like children, and more children poetry with like funny, you know, kind of like a funny message in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Like they have in Where the Sidewalk Ends, which is one of his first books, there's Hug a War, which it was like, I'd rather play Hug a War than Tug a War, where everybody hugs and nobody tugs.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on from there. And she loved that poem. So,
okay.
She liked...
That was her hobby?
Yeah, her hobby was definitely writing. She did it since she was, like, since I could remember. She always wrote.
Mm-hmm. And you have samples that you've been able to keep over time and, you know, to show people and whatnot?
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, that's good. That shows that, you know, she had other interests beyond just, you know, trying to take care of her family in the particular way where she unfortunately ended up. And I think we all have different facets of our life. And that's what we want people to be known for, all of the positive things that they accomplished. So was her dream to be a writer, you know, at a certain point in time?
I think it always was to be a writer, a songwriter, or a poet. I know in 2003 she had submitted a poem into, like, a poetry contest, and it got published by the person that was writing the poetry book, and it was a whole bunch of, like, poets written by different, you know, authors, and she got a certificate in the mail saying that her poem was published, and I wish I would can find that, where it was, because it was a really good poem.
Well, that sounds lovely. Can you tell me about her children?
She has two kids. One's a girl, one's a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And they remind me of her so much.
Do
but,
they?
Yes.
And her mannerisms and whatnot. How old are they now, and how are they doing, and what are they doing?
They're 12 and 6. They're doing good. You know, they're just being kids.
kids
cool.
In elementary school, right? Yeah.
Yes, elementary and middle.
I see. Well, you know, as I was looking at our comprehensive information that we posted, I'm seeing that there were at least five other victims that have been identified. And it struck me, I wondered if in doing this mission, you have had the time or the opportunity or even the desire to be in touch with the families of the other victims and maybe bond together sort of as a support for each other or, you know, just one-on-one. Have you been in touch with other families?
Oh, yeah. I've been in touch with Megan's family, which is Lorraine's mother and Lorraine's son. Megan's mother, Lorraine. And then also Amber's sister, Kim, and Melissa's mother, Lynn. And we're really, you know, close. We talk on the phone. Me and Lorraine talk on the phone every day. And if we can't talk on the phone every day, we IM every, you know, every day. I joke with her and tell her she's my morning coffee because I, like, talk to her every day in the morning.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We do visuals. We go to Long Island together, and we do visuals there.
By visuals, what do you mean?
Candlelight visuals for the girl.
Oh, visuals. Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you said. So you've had, how many candlelight vigils have you had?
We had two so far. We had one in June of 2011. Mm-hmm. That was close to when the girls went missing, you know, of the months. And then we had one in December 13th on the year anniversary of the girls being found.
And you've had good turnouts for those?
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, that's great. Can you talk about what you're doing with Crime Stoppers and what is the procedure? My understanding is that from your former event that you held in Colchester, Connecticut, for Stunts for Justice, that you raised $1,800. Is that right?
Yes.
And tell us about your mission going forward.
Well, going forward, my mission is to, by the end of the summer, to raise $5,000 to up the reward for $30,000. It's not so much, I don't do it so much for to raise the reward money, but I do it more for awareness and, you know, in memory of the girls. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of what drives me to help in some way. I know that I can't help in the investigation itself, but I would like to, you know, give back to the police that are, you know, trying to work hard on to giving our families some justice.
Well, by helping others, we help ourselves, right? Is that how you're feeling at this point?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, well, I think that's great. Do you have specific other events that you have planned throughout the summer?
Not yet, just because I am 5 months pregnant, so it's mm-hmm. kind of hard to plan stuff. I got a few friends that are, you know, looking into doing other things. I'm trying to get Stunts for Justice to go to Long Island so that we could do a stunt show in Long Island as well. Instead of doing the one in Connecticut, mm-hmm. we want to do one in Long Island so that, you know, the locals could also come and support and see, you know, see what we do.
Well, that would be good, and I think you draw people from maybe the tri-state area
yes.
as well, being in that location, you know, right? What do you want our audience, our national audience, to know about how the media is portraying the situation? I know some of your thoughts on that, but, you know, if you need to correct some ideas, here's your chance, one of many chances maybe. But let's get the correct message out there. What is it that you want to tell people that the media is doing wrong or the media is doing correctly?
Well, I think the media, what they're doing wrong is naming the girls as prostitutes or, you know, what they did to get into the circumstances that they were, instead of actually putting a name to the human being they are. To say that they're just, you know, 10 bodies found. You know, out of those 10 bodies, there was 5, you know, identified. Say their names. You know, they have names, and they were people. They weren't just bodies. You know, mm-hmm. you know their names. You could say, you know, this one was found on top of 5 unidentified. You know, I think that they do that wrong because they forget the human aspect of this.
That they were just disposable people, essentially. is what,
exactly.
You know, this, right. And we want to humanize them. We want to give them, you know, give them meaning. And through shows like these, I'm hoping that we will do that. When your sister was having, you know, shall we say maybe happier times, prior to some of her struggles toward the end, can you give us some idea what a typical day might have been with her when she was, like, enjoying her children or, you know, what would have been a typical day for her as, like, growing up and then maybe as an adult?
Well, growing up, Maureen.
Time with her.
Yeah, growing up, Maureen would always, she was the smart one. She was really good
smart
at school,
one?
So yeah, she was the smart one. She was really good at school.
Oh,
wait, came like naturally.
No. You're the smart person here as well. Look at what you've done. I want to acknowledge that right now. You are
no, growing
smart.
Up, she was.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
But she, you know, it
you
just
mean
came.
She was book smart. Is that what you mean? She was book
yeah,
smart?
She was book smart. Because I would have to study and study and to get something down. You know, she was
uh-huh.
pretty. Well off, just reading something and actually understanding it. She would just, you know, as a kid, we would always go outside and pick blueberries and raspberries and wild strawberries
mm-hmm.
and, you know, look for snakes, like gardener snakes. We were outside most of the time, me, my brother, and my sister, so
mm-hmm.
we played a lot outside
wow.
together.
Right. Delilah, why don't you jump in here and ask some questions here because you have a good perspective as well.
Well, you know, Missy, going back to the media coverage, I have to totally agree with you. And I think that's something that offended not just the families and but a lot of the readers and a lot of the listeners to the news reports were very offended by the fact, you know, that they it just didn't show the importance for these people that they deserve, in my opinion. But
mm-hmm.
given us your thoughts on that, and I think that's great, what do you think about all of the theories and a lot of the internet sleuths and everything out there trying to put a theory to all of this? How do you feel about that?
I kind of take it as a grain of salt now. I don't believe anything unless I get a phone call from Suffolk County Police Department, Homicide Division.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're going to reach out to us, you know, when it comes to time that they, you know, feel that it's necessary to. I think that everybody wants to, you know, try to understand, you know, the aspect behind who could have, you know, took people's lives and, you know, discard them. And I think it's a fear of knowing that there's someone out there that is still able to do the same thing to another, you know, a girl and another, and destroy another family. So I kind of, like, understand the internet sleuths and stuff like that, you know.
Like they think they're helping by doing that?
No, I mean, I don't think they think it's helping. I think it's just a way for them to, you know, feel like they are, you know, doing something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there that want to help in some way and really don't know or don't know of an avenue to help these families. And you're right. I think they feel by researching and coming up with, you know, the clues that they do, it is a way. You never know where that clue is going to come from. So
yeah,
it's you're right. It's best to take everything with a grain of salt and only believe what you hear officially. And,
yeah,
you know, where have you found your best support? I mean, what is holding you together? And through
I had that question too. That's a very good question. Yeah, tell us, Missy.
The one thing that holds me together is my children. You know, they're the reason. You know, they're my strength. And in order to be a good mother, I have to be healthy inside, emotionally and physically. So mm-hmm. they keep me on my toes. Second of all, I have my husband, and he's wonderful. He's such a great support. I've been with him for 6 years. He's been with me since before my sister went missing, before my brother passed away in 2009, and, you know, before my sister was identified. So he's been there with me every step of the way, and he's a great support, and he definitely holds me together because he will keep me, you know, in line. And third of all, it's the other family.
Yeah. That's so important to have. I'm sure if you didn't have them, you wouldn't be doing it as well as you are. I think it's amazing that you are doing this. You had spoken previously about having post-traumatic stress disorder, and can we ask you, if this isn't too personal a question, are you being seen by a medical professional with respect to that, or do you have time to see counseling in between all of the advocacy roles that you're taking on?
I have seen counseling for it as well. I had gotten better with it. It's just that's something that I'm probably going to have to deal with the rest of my life.
Right.
You know, I could deal with a lot of things in my life. I just can't deal with the fact that someone took my sister's life from me. So I do definitely do see my medical doctor, which is like my family doctor. And
mm-hmm.
He helps me. On top of that, you know, just staying busy and keeping positive really helps.
And your pregnancy is going well too?
Yes, now it is. I had a scare. When I was 12 weeks, I woke up and I was really bleeding a lot, and we thought we lost the baby. And when they did the ultrasound, I thought we weren't going to see any movement or anything. But the baby was happily in there, and they said that I had a partial placenta abruption, so I had to be on bed rest for a couple weeks. But everything's fine. He's a healthy 5-month gestational baby, and we're going to name him Dominic. He's a boy, so we're excited.
That's wonderful.
With everything you're doing for your sister's case and raising your children and keeping your family going, what are you doing for you?
Right.
Are you taking good care of yourself, Missy?
Are you doing?
I think that's a concern. For anyone that's going through that, and anyone who's advocating for no matter what situation they're in, advocates tend to get to a point where it's burnout time. And you know, I just really want to stress the point that you've got to take time for you. Whether you know, take an hour, go get your toenails painted. It's your time, and I don't know. I just had to say that.
You need to do this, Missy. Listen to her. She's a mother.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've always
Mother's Day. Take tomorrow off, will you?
well, tomorrow's my son's birthday, so I actually have to do his birthday party. He's going to be 3, so.
Oh my goodness.
I've always Yeah, but it's in my personality. I've always been the person to always have, you know, do for others than do for myself. I've always been like that. When my brother and my sister were alive, I would have Sunday dinners at my house. I would pay for the food. I would cook it. I enjoyed the fact that we were together and that we were able to do this. And, like, every holiday, and even when they would just come over, my brother would be like, what are you making tonight? So I've always been the type of person that, you know, not that I choose other people over me. I just choose to make someone else happy and choose to appreciate things and memories in life.
Well, you know, we have a lot in common.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, Donna. It's like, you know, doing what you do at the pace that you do it sometimes is very therapeutic as well. And, you know, I don't want to step into your personal life and tell you what to do, but you know, it does concern me, and I'm happy that you, you know, are doing so well with everything that's going on.
Right. We wanted to make sure of that, and if we didn't ask that, we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't be responsible people here like Mother Hen.
Yeah.
So be glad of that. Another thing I'd like to ask you, Missy, is, you know, I know you've had different types of jobs. I know you had said at one point you were a cashier. You're a bank teller right now, right?
Yes, I'm a bank teller right now. Yep.
Well, you know what? I'm thinking this experience, along with myself being a homicide survivor, this changes your entire outlook on life. And I'm thinking that, you know, once you have your child, and, you know, you're always going to be a mother. But in terms of career goals, has this changed your outlook of, well, when I get to that point and my children are, you know, at a certain level of independence, I want to do this full time. This is what I want to do. And has this horrific experience changed your mind about your eventual career aspirations? Or are your aspirations just to be basically a mom, a good mom, and a wife, and just do what you can, you know, informally? Has this, I think it's probably changed you in ways you didn't think, because I understand you're going to the NamUs conference in September, and you're going to be a presenter. Are you not?
Yes, I'm going to be a speaker, and
wow.
I'm going June 5th, so I'm pretty excited about that. I think my goals are the same. No, I always just wanted a good job that could support my family. But I think my, you know, my achievements of what I want to achieve have changed. They definitely is more volunteer and more helping others. And I think it helps me within to deal with the coping stress of losing my sister is to know that I could help save one person. Everything that I do volunteer-wise, it's worth it, no matter what. So,
you know, that's a wonderful attitude to have, and I know that you're going to be able to continue, you know, to give back in whatever way, even long after this experience at some point fades away from the national spotlight, and I know it has to be so stressful on you. But can you tell us what are the procedures if someone would like to donate to Crime Stoppers or even call in a tip if that's what they want to do? Can you talk about that a bit?
Oh, yes. They could call 1-800-220-TIPS. They could also go on the Suffolk County Police Department website, which you could Google Suffolk County Police and the website right there, and it has, you know, place a tip for the Gilgo Beach murders. You could do that also. There's so many different ways. You could also send texts, and, like, that's all information in the Suffolk County Police website as well.
Well, even if, as people are listening, and, you know, in this economy, things are tough and people typically don't have a lot of money, but if they still want to help in some way, can you tell us what they might be able to do that would be most meaningful for you and the other families?
If they would like to donate towards Stunts for Justice, which is trying to raise the $5,000 for the summer to donate to Crime Stoppers. There's an online website for donations. It's everribbon.com/stunts4justice. And right on there, it'll say donate. It has all the information on there as well. It has pictures of the girls and pictures of the unidentified, as well as the jewelry that was found of the toddlers and the mothers as well. So it's a good informational link, as well as if they want to, you know, just go there and read up on the whole case as well.
Missy, are the other families involved in this as well, or is this just something that you've put together personally?
Megan's mother, Lorraine Waterman, she's involved as well. She came down for the initial Stunts for Justice. Some of the other families, they're, you know, not busy, but they live in, like, different areas, you know, which is farther away from Connecticut. So, you know, we think that we're doing it as, you know, helping each other. We're, you know, as one. We don't look at it as if we're separate units. We do it as if we're one, you know, family combined.
Well, that's it. What do you feel as a whole, as a group of all the families that have come together during this, what do you feel like is the greatest need? If you, you know, could rub the magic lamp, what would you want to impart to the listeners as to what you need?
To, you know, just be supportive. You know, be positive, give positive feedback. Know that, you know, not only were our loved ones victims, we're also victims ourselves. And we live with the day-to-day tragedy of, you know, what had happened to our loved ones. So also, and to not be so quick to judge the whole situation until they understand, you know, the girls as human beings instead of what their business was, you know, what they were doing at the time when they were missing.
Are there particular goods and services that these families may be in need of? You know, if people can't send a lot of money, is there are there some other things that people might be able to gather up and send if they have things on hand? Or, you know, I can't imagine that everybody involved has unlimited funds, and we all can use hope in a certain way, and the other families may have small children. Are there other, besides having a positive attitude and that type of thing, are there other specific material goods that people could use, or can you think of anything?
I am not sure.
Okay.
I know that I'm all set. Other than, you
even
know,
baby
I...
clothes?
Even baby clothes? It's cute, thank you. You know, I think it's more of supportive. I don't think that we're out here to seek anything that is materialized, even if we need it. You know what I'm saying? I think it's just more awareness and that, because it's the most important thing to have people supportive and people there.
Well, I so agree with you in that attitude, but do you foresee that these families that you're connected with, that you may ever start a formalized support group or just informally continue as friends as this goes on? I remember being in Survivors of Homicide in the greater Hartford area, and I was a board member and an officer for many years, and you know, that was about public awareness and education and support, and it was so fulfilling. Do you foresee that anyone from your group might carry on a mission like that?
I would like to. That would be awesome down the road.
I think you should talk to Melissa Cruz about that. I mean, Michelle Cruz.
Yes, I definitely would like to do something like that. That would be awesome. I will, you know, definitely talk to Michelle about that, because that's actually a really good idea.
Well, thank you. I have a good idea every once a month or so. I'm so inspired by talking to you. And, you know, when we think about people that are in their young 20s, Delilah, what are they usually up to instead of doing stuff like this? It's just amazing to me what she's doing. It's just,
well, you know, it takes a very special person and a special type of person to, you know, to be able to hang on and do what you're doing and know that it's not easy and know when to reach out for help. I think a lot of times that's a victim's, I don't like to call victims, but you know what I mean. I think that's a lot of the downfall sometimes. They don't know when to reach out for help, and sometimes they wait too long. And if you recognize that you need it, there's no shame in asking for it. And
right.
I guess that's my mother hen coming out. But it's I've seen it happen a lot where people just down, they spiral downward so quickly because they don't know where to get help, or they don't know that there's help available. They don't
right.
know where to get the support that they need, or they're just too proud to ask for it, and they think they're okay, and that's
right.
not the case a lot of times.
And I'm going to speculate here and say that when, you know, God forbid, if this situation is prolonged and it continues, and when it gets solved or whatever, there may be a huge period of, oh my God, this is such a difference, such a letdown, if you will. Not that this is a positive thing, but your life has to switch back into the mundane routine, and I think that's going to be a difficult transition. That's why I say, if you know, I know Survivors of Homicide in Connecticut has various regionalized groups. I get their notices, and there's a group in Southington and a group in the greater Hartford area. Even if it were the fact of getting involved in one in the, you know, in New London County or whatnot, or maybe even starting your own on a or doing a specific project. I was seeing online where someone had started a quilt for crime survivors. And, you know, just anything like that, I think, keeps the memory going and that these were people and they weren't just disposable people and let's forget about them because they did thus and so. It's so unfair. And so, like I say, I just think, I know you're going to have your hands full with a new baby, but I think it's a time to, you know, you're going to be celebrating a new life, but yet you're doing so much in memory of Maureen. Can you talk a little? There's two things I'd like you to talk about, Missy. One is, I know you're very interested in and involved in what you're doing with Namus. And then the other, so that you don't forget, because I'm getting old, is can you, when I heard about how your brother just kind of hopped on his motorcycle with, I'm forgetting who it was, to go to New York and search, what brought them to that decision to just go and do it out of the blue? And what was that experience like for them, those two things?
We'll start with my brother and my husband go to New York. I think it was a spontaneous reaction. I mean, when you know something's wrong and you just have to react. And I think that's what happened. My husband, the next day, called his employer, and which we're really good friends with, and he was like, listen, Missy's sister's missing. We don't know where she is. We're going to New York. And they were like, okay, go, let us know. So they just jumped on their motorcycles out of the blue. I think that
was
just
that like? Did they go door to door at once they got to Times Square? What?
He walked around they walked around the area. They went to the hotel that she stayed at and talked to the guy there, which their conversation, I can't say what it was, just
right.
because that's part of, you know, the whole situation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But then they went to, you know, almost everybody that was passing by and asking them and showing them the picture. They didn't, you know, knock on door to door because there's so many businesses within Times
right.
Square. It's not like a normal neighborhood.
Right.
So, I mean, they definitely were disappointed because not even one person recognized her. And I don't think they were prepared for exactly how New York City and Times Square was, because we've never been there. So it was
right.
a different world to him, and he just didn't understand how my sister just vanished off the face of the earth with no one to recognize her at all.
Mm-hmm. And they came back. Now, is my recollection correct in that, was that the point in time when your brother had his accident?
No.
No, it was later?
No, that was later. My sister went missing in July of 2007.
Right.
My brother passed away in August 14th at 1:21 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. My goodness.
In 2009.
And purely so, a motorcycle wreck with another vehicle?
Yes. There's weird highways in Connecticut. And especially when you get off the highway on, like, an off-ramp onto an extension of, like, you know, maybe a route.
Right.
It starts with two lanes and all of a sudden goes into one.
Yes.
Well, where my brother crashed, it went into one, and on top of it, it was a turn. And there was a dump truck there that had dirty lights, and the dirt was over the lights, and my brother didn't see the truck. Because there was no lights there. And there was no signs on that street that, you know, that off.
Is this at night,
exit.
Missy?
Yes, it was at night. He was heading back to my house. And there was no street lights there. And there was no, like, signs that says it merges into one. So, I mean, he didn't see the truck. And he hit right into the back of it.
My goodness, that's awful. How old is he?
He was 24.
The age that you are now.
Well, I'm actually 27.
Oh, you
are? People think I'm 24. Yeah, I'm 27. I'm going to be 28 on Wednesday, so.
You are about your age.
No. I try to correct it.
All right, we'll correct
because
it from now on.
That would be some explaining. 24 years old with four, almost five kids. Oh, man.
Well, I'm glad you said that. Okay, we know you're a mature 28-year-old now. Well, you know, I just can't imagine you're talk about shattered lives, and that's the title of our show. And you're just dealing with this incredibly. You have one other sister besides your brother that passed away. Is that correct?
No, I just had my brother and my sister.
Your brother and Maureen. Okay.
Yeah.
So you are the sole sibling.
Yeah, and there's this kind of, I don't know if it's crazy, but a story about that.
About what?
Because that I'm the only, you know, standing sibling. I'm the middle child, but
mm-hmm.
In 2001 I got into a car crash. And the car flipped over and over, and I got ejected out of the car, and it fell on top of me and did a 180 with me underneath it. I got life-starred to a hospital, and my family was told that I had a 20% chance of living, that they weren't even going to know if I was going to survive enough to get to the operating table.
My goodness. Did you have a head injury and broken bones and whatnot?
I have two metal plates in my right arm that holds my bones together. I have five plates that make up my pelvis because they didn't want to put a full hip replacement because every 15 years you would have to get it done, and they didn't want to do that. So my hip surgery took like 15 hours to do because they were putting my hip piece by piece back. With plates. I have three rods in my ribs. I broke all my ribs on my right side, broke my shoulder blade, collapsed both my lungs. I was on life support. I was on lung machine. I punctured my spleen. And there was a time that they didn't know that I was going to live.
How long were you in the hospital for this? Oh, my goodness.
Well, I was, I woke up... When I was in my coma, I woke up 6 days after, and I had no idea what happened. I still don't remember to this day. But I woke up to my sister, which is a great memory. My sister was sitting there taking the dirt and the glass out of my hair, and she was so mad that the doctors didn't clean me up. She was just like, you know, she was just so upset. She was like, how can
you
just leave
you? She was being the mother hen. She was being the mother hen to you, right? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I couldn't talk because they had, you know, disconnected my jaw to put, you know, tubes down my throat, one to suck, you know, the blood clots from my lungs and all the heart and lung machines and everything. And it was pretty crazy when I woke up, and I just didn't know what was going on. But Oh,
my goodness.
Well, I know that my brother wanted to come.
I've got to say, you are here for a reason. I hope you know that.
Yes, and that's what holds me strong.
Yes. I don't know if you know, but I've had 55 surgeries in my life for two different medical issues. And so, again, there's something else we have in common there. So I think we need to stay in touch here.
Yes.
You know? My goodness, you're such a trooper. And oh, my goodness, I just admire your perseverance and your strength. And, you know, I saw the beautiful certificate online that Michelle Cruz gave you, and I think you deserve so much more than a piece of paper. I think you should be governor.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. You're just a Wonder Woman.
Thank you. And it took a long way.
I'm sure it did, and you know, I'm sure your husband's so proud of you too, and I'm so glad you met, you know, it sounds like the man of your dreams. And in the 13 minutes that we have left here, would you be able to get into your work with Namus and also tell us something? You know, I'm not talking about revealing any secrets, but tell us something that you haven't shared with other people, perhaps regarding yourself or the goodness of your sister on other shows. I want to know, you know, something that maybe you haven't thought of sharing that you would like to.
Okay. First of all, been talking with Michelle Cruz, which is Connecticut State Advocate Attorney for the whole Connecticut. She's awesome. She's a great supporter and advocate for Namus. And when I spoke at the National Crime Victims Awareness Event, she came up to me and she was like, you know, would you like to do a Namus conference? Because I really feel that, you know, your story, Maureen's story, would impact them, you know, and show them the reality of this, that it's not just a job and, you know, how to do Namus, but also there's the human aspect of that. Mm-hmm. And I know that Janice Smolinski,
yes.
Yeah, I can't say her last name. She's going to be speaking as well. And so we get, me speaking as the behalf of, you know, women and women in, you know, the type of business of my sister and how they shouldn't be portrayed as just someone that wants to go missing because of the business, you know, what they were doing. And then we got Janice that is there to talk about, you know, male missing, which is important because males go missing all the time. And just because they're males and just because they're big doesn't mean that, you know, harm can't, you know, come to them. So I think it's a really big impact to, you know, stand in front of police officers that are training for Namus to learn how to actually use this, like, great tool for missing persons, not only missing persons but also identified persons, and to hear the human aspect of each way.
Is this conference just for police officers in training on Namus, or are crime victims also welcome for that?
I think it's more the police training, yes, because I don't think crime victims could go on Namus. You know, they actually have to, for Namus, you have to register and you have to be, you know, a police authority. Because that missing person has to be entered in NCIC before you do Namus. So I think it's more for police officers, but to impact police officers and to tell them the importance of, you know, to investigate missing persons and take it as if, you know, this person is considered in danger until proven otherwise.
Right.
You know, instead of people viewing missing persons as they want to be missing until otherwise. So I think that the police will actually be more impactful. And they're the ones that are, you know, going to be taking missing persons cases on. So it's more important to, you know, talk to them and tell them, No, the importance of it.
Well, I think you're going to knock them dead. I think you're going to be very, very impactful and inspiring, and I'm so glad that Michelle made that offer. And I hope that you will report back to us on how it went, you know, as well as, you know, any updates. And if you feel, like I said, we still have about 9 minutes, but I just want to issue you an open invitation. And if you feel that there's something else coming up in terms of an update that would be important from your perspective, you have an open invitation to come back on the show at any time.
Okay, thank you very much.
You certainly do. You can get in touch with myself or Delilah.
Where is the conference going to be held? And
it's going to be in Merritt. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's a national conference. So are all police agencies across the country invited to this?
Hold on. Let me pull up the information for you.
Okay. And
It's a missing persons and training for Connecticut law enforcement community, NAMIS conference. So BJ's
stand.
In the Pulse Auditorium in Meriden, Connecticut.
Okay, the police in the where the police have their training.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good.
And the director of NAMIS is also going to be speaking, and so it would be really interesting and very insightful.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't say enough good about the importance of NAMIS. It's something that needs to be in every single police department across the country. And if any listeners out there are listening and you are law enforcement, find out how to get this going in your area through the coroner's office, through the police department. When is the next vigil planned in Long Island?
We haven't planned one for the summer this year, just because I've been pregnant. I'm told not to travel out of Connecticut by my doctor.
Okay.
Specifically just because of the problems.
Is the
but most likely
this event going to be next, Missy?
Yes, we
Long Island?
We are in the process of trying to plan that.
Do you need that's something that might be practical. Do you need people from the tri-state area, for instance, to help you coordinate and plan either of those events?
Oh, yes, of course. If anybody knows, yes, if anybody knows of, you know, a venue, like a lot, that would be able to, you know, donate their time for, you know, the stunt show. On top of that, if anybody wants to help, you know, they could always email me at stunts, the number 4, justice. At yahoo.com, and they can email me, and you know, we could talk about, you know, getting everything together as
right.
well.
And maybe even some of the other families that you're in touch with. If, as I say, this goes out nationally, and if there are people in other areas that want to help coordinate even a new event that you haven't thought of on their own, I'm sure that you wouldn't turn it down, correct?
Oh no, I want it. I'm open-minded, and anything to help, I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what if you reach your goal of $5,000, is all of that money earmarked for going toward raising public awareness or particular searches that they do for the other families, or what does the money go toward?
It's going towards the Crime Stoppers reward for information on the case. Right now it's $25,000, hoping to up it to $30,000. As soon as I meet that goal, either if I can't travel to Long Island, my husband's going to travel to Long Island and actually hand them the check for it. So.
That's great. Wow. So you're hoping to do that by maybe like September 1st?
Yes.
Oh, that's a wonderful goal. And I would hope that if that does happen, and even if it takes longer than that, that you get tons of positive press, because you certainly deserve it. And, you know, that will be something for us to look forward to. And let's see, in the last 5 minutes or so, can you give us some parting advice or some comments that you'd like to impart to us that you haven't had a chance to? And then I want to give your contact information again, extend the invitation if you'd like to come back in the future, and then we'll wrap it up.
My advice is just for any family that is a, you know, have a missing loved one, is to, you know, be persistent, stay on, you know, the authorities, make sure that you're doing, you know, what you have to do. Even if you get the cold shoulder, keep on pushing and keep on pushing, just because you are that person's voice. They don't have that voice right now, so you Right. have to, you know, be their voice and be their speaker. And, you know, also for, you know, families that, you know, lost loved ones to murder, there's always someone out there, you know, to support, to talk, to understand. And don't allow yourself to destroy yourself, because right. yourself is your greatest enemy. And I've learned that through this, you know, through this year and a half of, you know, finding out that my sister was murdered, I learned that, you know, yourself is your greatest enemy. So you gotta, you know,
work through
the hard
times. Well, you can also be
your
greatest asset.
Yes, you can.
No, you
and
can.
And the strength, it outweighs the weak, so.
Well, I think you rise to the occasion. We never know in these circumstances of those of us that have had violent crime that we would ever be put through this. So, again, I applaud you, and I thank you so much for coming on. And I just like to say a couple parting words with regard to Shattered Lives. Stay tuned for some other wonderful shows coming up, and please do go to ImaginePublicity.com. Delilah has a wonderful organization with a lot of many interesting clients and professionals. Please do check out her website. Please do read my blogs, as well as anyone that's interested in my credentials. I am looking for future employment in crime victim advocacy, in law enforcement, and in writing, as Maureen was. I cover the gamut in my blogs. There's a new one on missing elderly, intimate partner violence, the justice system, suicide, human trafficking, people who have been forgotten, such as Melissa. I write on disabilities, gay and lesbian issues. So there's a plethora of information on there. So please, please do go and see that. And in the meantime, I want to have everyone remember that when it comes to helping survivors of crime, don't just try, make it happen. And thank you so much, Delilah, and thank you, Missy, and please do keep in touch with me. Let me know if they develop a support group down there, and we will help promote it, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you. I wish you all well until next Saturday. We do movie reviews next week, so stay tuned. Good night.
All right, thank you. Good night.
Bye.